Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Carr Lemley feels it would be a little unkind to present this picture without just a word of friendly warning. We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein, a man of science who sought to create a man after his own image without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, we warned you.
Well, maybe not Frankenstein, but we are warning you. Good evening, and welcome to Eerie House Only Tiny Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by...
You know, from Spook Show, you're in a fishbowl. Dave Binkley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And hope I'm not gargling like Dale is.
Am I on the inside looking at...
Yeah, stop gargling during the broadcast, Dale, I'm telling you.
Oh, is it coming in poorly?
It's in now. Good. But it is the whole time we talked ahead of time. As soon as we came on, you were gargling. But you're fine now. Depending on what your definition of fine is, yes.
Well, yeah. Very fine.
Very fine. That's a good definition.
Well, let that be a warning to you. Never gargle on the air.
Oh, my. Yes, indeed.
Yep. And we got...
Go ahead.
We give you fair warning. You're stuck with me and Dave tonight.
Yep. Look that way. With perhaps a dash of CW coming in later.
We hope. If not, that's fine. We've always got Fogsbane and good old Bob here in the chat live with us. And thousands, maybe millions more that we can't see.
That was full thinking, huh?
Millions and billions.
And we even have a brand new science fiction radio show to bring to you tonight, Dale.
Yeah, this one's new to this show, Beyond Tomorrow.
That's because there were only three of them ever made. Some of the earliest science fiction even beat the Dimension X program by about a month or so. But CBS only put three of these together and then just left the project, never to return.
Why, the naive of them. That's all right. We've got one of them tonight. Incident at Switch Path. Sounds interesting.
Yeah,
plus a couple more for you. We got an escape and a suspense.
Yeah. So we got a suspense. Suspense is a poor sister escape and a Beyond Tomorrow. That's what people kind of refer to Escape. It was a great show where suspense a lot of times would go after Hollywood actors to come and get one in per show, that kind of a thing. Where Escape just used some of the best radio actors that were available there on the West Coast.
And the results of both are very good. A little different, like Dave mentioned, but I have always enjoyed both shows very much.
I have too. And Escape, upon occasion, would bring in a well-known voice. Starting off with, you know, they had Jack Webb and quite a few, Vincent Price and at least two that I know of. So every once in a while they'd get a star to come on, but it was never the focus. The focus was on the stories, the presentation, and the music, the sound effects. That's what the focus was. And by using a lot of William Conrad, of Paul Frees, and tonight we have Howard McNear coming in to help out with this one. So, you know, it's some of the best radio voices out there in the West Coast. That's what you get with most escapes.
Yep, and good old Bob just took the first step. He stood up, said, "My name is Bob, and I'm a radioholic."
yes, from your sign, your warning sign you made there for the in the slideshow. Absolutely hilarious. Yeah.
Yep. It's your first stop into your 12-step program of no recovery. So
that's right, because there is no recovery.
We got a whole lot of radio.
Yep, no recovery from old time radio. And Dale, we've got several warnings coming to us from products. Stupid warnings coming to us from products that were there for even stupider people.
Yes, which we found is necessary. As I've always ranted and as I shared with Dave before the show started, being a smoker, okay, I carry a lighter. And I'm tired of fooling around with, I do love a good Zippo lighter. But I get the standard old Bic lighters, right? And I know it costs 75 cents more for the little sticker that has like maybe 1,000 words crammed into, in a very small space. When condensed, it says, fire hot. If you get my drift.
Yeah, I can see how that happens, yes.
Yeah, that's just, humanity. They're going to kick me out.
Well, sometimes we don't belong there, Dale. Sometimes we don't.
No. Let them kick me out. See if I care. I'm tired of paying the dues.
Fire bad. Right, Fox Bait. Fire bad.
Smoke good. I don't know. These generics, they're kind of... But what's a little asbestos between friends? We've got thrillers for you tonight. Yeah, there's even a warning on these two for some reason. These cigarettes. Something about a Surgeon General. Well, yeah, I don't know if I want to trust Army doctors, especially lately. Contains carbon monoxide. Okay, well, that's nice. That's nice that they told me.
Yeah. There you go.
I have been forewarned. And you, don't start. Smoking, that is.
Yeah. But always start listening to old-timey radio.
They don't stink like Zippos. And if you have a leaky one, it burns on your leg, man. That that lighter fluid will burn your flesh.
Which one's more expensive, the Bic or the Zippo?
A Zippo is more reliable in a windstorm. Bics, you can't always light outside. Yep. Fogsbane knows. He feels totally a rash from the lighter fluid. He knows it. But Zippos are cool. I got a Zippo for Christmas, in fact, and the artwork on it is a cover of Famous Monsters magazine. Is that cool or what? So I will take that out on special occasions.
I have to admit, that is kind of cool. Yeah. And when it isn't lit, yeah.
Yeah. If Food Art and Fest ever comes back, there's a special occasion for me.
There you go.
I don't know. Is it ever going to come back? Do we know?
I've been told several times it is, but then every time they talk about it coming back, they say, well, but not this year. So,
we do. In the Cleveland area, we do need another player in the monster arena. Or horror stuff, or especially for stuff like Goulardi, Big Chuck, the Ghoul, and so forth.
Yeah.
And all the genres around it, horror movies and old-time radio, which we got a lot of.
We got a lot of old-time radio.
Yep. And where should we begin tonight, Dave?
Well, good question. If we go from the earliest to the latest or latest to the earliest, what shall we do?
Let's move up in time. Let's start with the eldest.
The eldest, okay. That would be beyond tomorrow. And again, it comes to us from the spring of 1950, and it was meant to be CBS's first science fiction radio program. The show was announced in newspapers, but it's not known if any episodes were actually broadcast. It does have three broadcast dates for these. It has an audition date. Now, the only one that wasn't done in another place was the one we have tonight, Incident at Switchpath. Requiem and The Outer Limit were both done on X-1. And several different stories did The Outer Limit. But Requiem and was done on both Dimension X and X Minus One. But this is the Incident Switchpatch, the one we have tonight. It was a story by Theodore Sturgeon, and probably the only, it's of the three, the only story that didn't get repeated in any other science fiction program.
Ah, so this is not only a first time for this program for us, but a story you're not going to hear on any other old-time radio program.
Well, plus the fact that this is a got Brett Morrison, who was at the same time was playing the Shadow, but he's got playing himself as an old man. He did that many times. If he wasn't playing his own wonderful, deep, rich Lamont Cranston voice, he did this. He did play this older character, which you'll hear in this episode tonight as well.
Sure. Well, let's kick things off. Here's part one of Incident at Switchpath.
And it comes to us from April 11th of 1950.
Now for tonight's story. Let's go beyond tomorrow.
Yes, let's.
Are you afraid to face tomorrow, or whatever may lie beyond tomorrow? Do you think you're up to spending a weekend on the moon, or entertaining house guests from Mars? Can you and your children adjust to the strange, new, wonderful world that is being wrought in the test tubes and cyclotrons of science beyond tomorrow? Beyond Tomorrow, a new program of probabilities drawn from the vast library of science fiction, where anything is possible and possibly may happen to you. Tonight, based on a famous story by Theodore Sturgeon and adapted by Draper Lewis, a tale about a man accused of murder in a small western town who insists it was not murder, but something really much worse.
Presiding coroner here, and I'll handle this inquest my way, if you don't mind.
All right.
Now, look, Kemp, why can't you get it through your head that nobody's trying to railroad you into admitting anything? You're just a fella knows something about the death of this here Alessandro Sykes. And this court would like to know exactly what happened.
I'll tell you what happened. That kid killed Sykes. Killed him dead in the doornail, and then brought the body back here and dumped it in his hotel room. That's what happened.
No, you're wrong. I didn't kill him. You're trying to accuse me of murder, but I tell you, it's something worse. Something much, much worse than murder.
If we don't have any quiet in this courtroom, I'm going to have the sheriff clear the place. This inquest is going to be run legal-like or ain't going to be run at all.
You mean maybe we should have the hanging right now, Bert?
I didn't say no such thing.
Well, maybe you shouldn't. Stop wasting so much time.
Well, Mr. Wilson, sir, you can't let him hang me. I'm innocent, I tell you. I didn't kill Sykes. Aren't you even going to listen to what I got to say?
Sure, son, I'm going to listen. We're all going to listen. Or I'm taking this boy into Tucson where there's a jury that will listen.
Well, this better be good. We don't like murder around Switchpath.
Darn, we don't like strangers neither. If you gentlemen are through now, suppose we hear what the boy has to say.
I don't know.
All right, son. Now let's get the facts straight first off. Your full name?
James Gordon Kemp.
And your home?
Chicago, Illinois.
City bred, huh? Maybe that's why he don't give no mind to something like murder.
I thought you was always so proud about the times you've been to Tucson, Haverty.
Huh?
Seems to me wearing silk shirts is pretty city-fied, too. All right. Here, son, sit down.
Thank you.
Now, suppose you tell us what happened. Tell us the whole story just like it happened.
Okay. I'll try. I guess I'd better go right back to the beginning. The first time I ever saw this here, Sykes. It must have been about 2 months ago. I had a little repair shop at the time, just auto parts and maybe fooling around with radios and TV sets now and then. It didn't make no big profit, but it paid the rent and gave me a little extra pocket money. I was working in my shop one afternoon when he walked in. He watched what I was doing a couple of minutes. Then he spoke up.
You Gordon Kemp?
I said yes and looked him over. He was a scrawny fella, probably 60 years old, and wound up real tight. He talked fast, smoked fast, moved fast, as if there wasn't time for anything, but he had to get on to something else. I asked him what he wanted.
You the man had that article in the magazine about a concentrated atomic torch?
Yeah, only that guy from the magazine used a lot of loose talk. He says my torch is 300 years ahead of its time. But actually, it's something I stumbled on by accident, more or less. It's an ordinary atomic hydrogen torch, but it's plenty hot. It'll cut anything, anything. And since it got patented, you'd be surprised at the calls I got. You got no idea how many people want to cut into bank vaults and the side doors of hock shops.
I'd like to take a few weeks off and go out west. Arizona? I want you to cut your way into a cave there.
A cave? Is it legal?
Sure it's legal.
How legal?
You'll get me into that place. You can satisfy yourself as to whether it's legal. I'll give you $5,000.
What?
Cash.
How's that again?
Get me into that cave, and you'll get $5,000. Cash.
How come you happen to run across this here cave, Professor Sykes? Didn't anyone else in Switch Path ever spot it?
Yeah, from what I can gather, there must have been a shifting of rock. Maybe a slight earth tremor that opened it up. The time I was fresh out of college, spending all my time digging for Indian ruins, I found it at the bottom of a deep cleft. Small, dark room, all rock walls. Rock that was very old. A couple of 100,000 years. Maybe 500,000.
Half million?
It wasn't the rock that got me so excited. It wasn't the rock and it wasn't the cave. It was the machinery in the cave.
What?
Machinery that must have been put there before there were any human beings on Earth.
Oh, not just a minute, Professor.
Now, look. I don't care whether you believe me or not. I know what I'm talking about. Those machines were installed in that cave room back when there wasn't a single living creature of any sort.
But that doesn't make sense. If there are machines, then some human beings must have made them. Some human beings must have hauled them into the cave and assembled them. Only you say there weren't any human beings on Earth.
Maybe not on Earth, Kemp. But there are human beings someplace else. At least beings. Who knows whether they're human or not?
Wow. That's a nice, pleasant thought.
Yes. I thought so, too, at the time. I've gotten used to it now. I got used to it during all the days and nights I stayed in that room and studied that machinery.
What kind of machinery was it?
Well, I finally figured out that one of them was some sort of a radio transmitter. Now, get this. Here's a machine with an antenna on top of it, just like a microwave job. Beside it is another machine. The second machine is shaped like a dumbbell standing on one end. Top of it is sort of a covered hopper. At the waist of the machine are two big spools with a wire running between them made out of some alloy that was never seen before on this earth.
Were they running?
One was running, making a slight humming sound. The dumbbell machine was running, and that's what gave me a clue to what it was. That machine is a recorder. And that automatically makes the other machine a transmitter.
A recorder? What kind of a recorder?
It records the physical being of the entire Earth. Every earthquake, every continental shift, weather cycles, every hurricane and volcano eruption and landslide. Now here, take a look at this. Piece of wire, huh? About 35 gauge. Money tough. Yes. I cut it off the recording machine. Kemp, my boy, it took a long time, a lot of years out of my life. I finally got it decoded. I can read that wire. You've no idea in what detail that piece of wire records, second by second, minute by minute, day by day, through the years, through the centuries. When I start my decoding, I'll be able to prove things which until now have only been guessed, only whispered about in the history books of the world. I'll be able to give the exact time and date when the Red Sea parted for the fleeing Israelites. You want to know what happened to the Spanish Armada? I have it all here. What about the last days of Pompeii? I have it, son. I have it. And I am going to give it to the world. Me, Alessandro Sykes. Give it to humanity complete and provable, and history will be reckoned from the day I speak.
I admit he did sound a little off his rocker. And if I had any sense, I would have gotten off that train and gone back to Chicago. But he was such a nice little guy. As nice a little character as you'd ever want to meet. And he figured he had something big in that cave.
Yes, I tell you, something important enough that he'd been living with it, thinking about it, working on it day in and day out for 30 years or more.
You can't look that kind of a guy down.
All of us here knew Sykes pretty well, Camp. His family was among the first settlers in Switchpath. Came in on a wagon train just before the rush in 49. We knew he spent a lot of time digging around in the desert, but we never heard about no cave.
It's 30 miles or so to the east of town. You pass a big rock formation. It's shaped like a crescent. And the cave's a little further
up. I've been out by Crescent Rock more times than I can count, and I never see no cave.
But you wouldn't see it if you didn't climb into the cleft.
Something happened out there just about 2 years ago. Ground was hot for miles around. All the grass shriveled up and died. Nothing's grown there since.
Yeah, besides, if Sykes had found a cave, he certainly would have told somebody here in town. Ain't like he was an outsider, if you know what I mean.
For sure.
That cave was there. It's not there now, but it was there, and I was in it.
Sykes didn't tell anyone else about it because he knew no one would believe him. He wanted to get his proof first.
And what makes you think we believe you, Kemp?
This is the truth I'm telling you. This is how it happened.
And you still haven't told us about the killing yet.
No, how about that?
I said this inquest was going to be run legal, my boy.
Hey, we're wasting a lot of time. The whole story smells to high heaven, and you know it.
I ain't passing judgment one way or the other till I hear what the boy has to say. And I still mean what I said about having the court cleared. All right. Now, go on, Kemp. What happened when you got here to Switchpath with Sykes?
I don't think anyone will remember the night we arrived. I was dead tired from the trip, and I wanted to get some sleep. But the professor was all for getting out of town as quick as possible. He didn't want to answer any questions. So we piled all the stuff into his rattly old car and started for Crescent Rock. It was plenty spooky driving across the desert at night. It was a cold wind. It kicked up the dust and you breathed dust. Bit into us. The old man kept peering straight ahead. And every now and then he'd change the direction.
Swing a little to the right, son. It's an old castle trail. We followed it for 5 miles or so.
He knew the way perfect.
It's Crescent Rock way up there ahead. Just keep it head on.
We didn't detour or backtrack once.
It's another 10 miles now. Distance is pretty tricky out here. Things look closer than they really are.
And then, just as it began to get near dawn, the sky was all smoky and you could start seeing the scrub weeds and cactus growing around the trail. Sykes grabbed my arm and said...
Pull up here, son. Walk the rest of the way to the cave. I don't want anybody snooping around while we're down there with those machines. I don't want anyone to know a thing until I'm ready to tell them.
That's our official goat warning device. And we have others too, don't we?
There ought to be warnings if there's a goat in the house. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if there's a something else.
Warning! 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 Alien approaching.
There you go. You gotta have warnings for that.
I was no alien. That was my ex-wife.
That's right. I always thought of the terms as synonymous.
Oh, my. In trouble again, I am, by saying things like that. Shame on me, shame on me, shame on me.
Yeah, we're going to get beat up for that. Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I promise not to do it again until the next time.
Yep. Just until then, huh? Okay.
Until next time.
Incident at Switchpath. There's all kind of subterfuge and sneaky stuff going on.
Yep, and I did double check just to make sure, and yeah, it is Brett Morrison who is the professor in this one. So, yeah, the old professor.
Ah. Well, do we want to kick off with a couple of these stupid warning labels?
I think we should. Where would go
There's
ahead?
Plenty.
And just, yeah,
our
plenty
there.
Start
at the top
there.
And work our way down.
Okay. Okay, I'll take a warning on a wheelbarrow. Not intended for highway use. Okay, I'll agree with that.
Unless you're Jesse Owens or something, you can run like 55 miles an hour, maybe. I don't know. Here's one, a warning label on a baby stroller. Caution, remove child before folding.
Oh, my. All right, I'll skip the next one to let you do the next one there. Warning label on Apple's website, do not eat iPod Shuffle.
It does look a little bit like a candy wafer thing.
I guess. It has a play button on it? Okay.
Maybe because it says Apple? I don't know.
Oh, and it's green like a Granny Smith apple.
There you go.
Okay.
And we'll wrap up this segment with this warning label on a Chipotle semi-truck. Notice, drivers do not carry burritos.
I left the thermometer for you. Okay.
Probably because some idiot ran out onto the freeway. Oh, Chipotle. Oh. Got smeared.
Yep.
And then they... Warning labels almost always are the result of a frivolous lawsuit, in my opinion, a frivolous lawsuit.
Yes. Yes. Like, stemming back from the or to protect themselves from frivolous lawsuits, but stemming back to the McDonald's coffee, where the woman put the hot cup of coffee between her legs because she didn't have a cup holder. Got second degree burns because coffee is hot. I thought that's why you bought coffee at McDonald's. It wasn't for the taste. It was for the hot coffee.
Oh, yeah, especially in winter. Oh, you could warm up your hands nice on a cup of hot coffee.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll have more of these for you. I'm sure there's plenty. Gee, Dave, I don't know why you wanted me to skip that one.
No, I skipped it so you could have it.
Oh, I see. I thought maybe you...
Nah, so go ahead and give that one as we're going into our next segment.
All right, since I whet your appetite, Dave was too cowardly. For
I resemble that remark.
A thermometer. Once used rectally, the thermometer should not be used orally.
Okay.
And that was our warning labels for this segment. So we'll have some more for you later.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
It's we got the alarm.
I don't know. Oh, it's like a Mystery Science Theater. Radio side! Radio side! Fans of Mystery Science Theater will know what I mean. Now let's move on and wrap up. Incident at Switchpath from Beyond Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just about 100 feet or so to be at the entrance to the room, son.
Boy, I never knew how much this torch weighed till I had it strapped on my back.
Sure, I can't give you a hand with it.
No, it's okay, Professor. Don't worry.
Over there, that's all that's left of the place where I used to camp at night. I was afraid to sleep in the room, afraid to sleep outside the cleft. I used to make a fire and bed down on the rock.
Can't say I'd enjoy that over a long period of time.
You can get used to anything if it's important enough. I got used to the dark, the sound of little animals scurrying around, the damp, the smell. Wait.
Huh?
This is it, Kemp. You can take off your pack, yeah?
There. Oh, that feels better. Oh, I'm glad I can still straighten up.
You see that place there? Between the two pillar formations? That's it, son. And it's all yours. If that 300 years in the future torch of yours is any good, now's the time to prove it.
And now, back to our story.
Okay. Now stand clear of the equipment, Professor. Sure that tank is balanced squarely?
Can pile a few more rocks around it.
Yeah, well, we'll give it a try this way. If it starts to move, just give a shot.
I'll watch it, Kent.
Well, here we go.
How long do you think it'll take, Kent?
I don't know. It depends on how thick the rock is that's sealing up this room.
James, think of it. On this little piece of wire, I have a complete record of the movement of the polar glacier, which will have all the learned busybodies gnashing their teeth. But have I said anything? Not me. Not Sykes? I'll wait till I can get the whole spool of wire, and I'll translate it into a history of the earth and mankind written in such detail, with such detail, with such authority. That the name of Sykes will go into the language as a synonym of the miraculously accurate. Me, Alessandro Sykes.
Hand me those black goggles, huh? How long have we been at it now, Professor?
Almost 3 hours, son. You better let me spare you.
No, I'll take a breather when I need one. This torch is too heavy for you to handle. By the way, whatever happened to the entrance we used before? How can we have to burn our way in like this?
That, my boy, is an unforeseen quality of the machine. For some reason, they closed themselves up. In a way, I'm glad they did. I was unable to get back in. I was forced to concentrate on my sample. If it hadn't been for that, I doubt I would ever have cracked the code. Whoever left these machines here, how they operate, we may never know. It would be interesting to find out. The important thing now is to get into that room and get that spool of wire. That's all that matters, son. That's all that matters.
Oh, 6 hours and only 7.5 inches. I've seen that torch of mine walk in a laminated bank vaults like the door was open. What kind of rock is this, anyhow?
It must have been some chemical substance added that we don't know about when the room was sealed.
And you think that machine will still be running after the blast of heat it must have took to build this wall?
It'll be running. They'll both be running. The recorder and the transmitter.
What do you mean? The transmitter?
Because the recorder was set to trip it off. I found that out, too. There's a little gear train waiting by the wire, and when something happened somewhere on Earth that was just the right thing, Crimp would show in the wire, which would hit the gear train and start up the transmitter.
Yes, but you said...
I saw a crimp in the wire. Something happened which put a wiggle in it, the thing I was looking for all along. I was in the cave the day it happened. There was a sharp click. The transmitter started up, and the wire kept on recording. I looked in the papers the next week to see what it was. I couldn't find a thing. It wasn't until the following August that I found out.
What was the date when it started to transmit?
July 16,
1945. July 16th.
The day the first atom bomb was exploded at Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Okay. Okay, Professor. Hold the light a little higher. This should do it now.
Edges cool.
30 years' work. 30 years, Kent.
Professor.
Who do you think's on the receiving end of that transmitter?
I don't know. I'm only sure whoever he is or they are, they're not any place on this earth. So I've been so anxious to get into the room.
Well, we'll throw that canvas over the edges. Just now, you take the big flashlight. I'll bring the lamp.
We can remove the spool of wire and then destroy the machines. It won't be any good to anyone else once the recording device is disconnected. The light, Kemp. Bring in the light quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah, I'm right behind you, Professor.
Oh, brother. You aren't kidding about that machinery, Worth.
They're beautiful, aren't they, Kemp?
I've never seen anything that looks like that transmitter.
And the recorder, Kemp. Come closer. Examine the recorder. Listen to it humming, Kemp. I knew it would be humming. It's recording everything that's happening to the Earth, the whole Earth. Will we stand here and listen to it humming?
Professor, maybe we better get the wire and get out of here. This place gives me the willies.
Don't be frightened, son. Machines can't hurt you.
It's not the machines. I just don't like this place. Let me hold a flashlight. You disconnect the spool.
There should be a catch lever of some sort which frees it. Something like a movie camera or one of those old-fashioned wire recorders.
Yeah, well, maybe I can find it, Professor. I've worked with these things.
No,
and I know.
No, I can find it. Just let me alone. You forget that I've been... Oh, Kemp. Kemp.
What's the matter, Professor?
Kemp, the reel is empty. Look. It's only 8 inches of wire on it. Only 8 inches, Kemp. It was almost full before the cave was seen.
That's impossible. No one could get through that rock. No one, I tell you.
The reel's been refilled. That's what's happened. It's been refilled. Kemp, they've been here.
Who's been here, Professor?
That's what the transmitter was for, Kent. Tell them when the first atomic power was used on Earth. We caught it with the transmitter. It sent out a signal. They answered it and came here and changed the reel. It's the beginning of a new era, as far as they're concerned.
Sykes. Sykes. Who are you talking about? Who are they? What do you mean?
I don't know. I don't know, but they've been here. And I've lost 30 years' work. 30 years of my life completely gone, disappeared.
Professor, you got to pull yourself together. We got to get out of here. I don't like this at all.
Get out? Why get out? Damage has been done now. The reel's gone.
I don't like the way that thing hums. Sounds like it's just sitting there, waiting and... Crimp. It hit another crimp in the wire. The transmitter started again.
Doesn't matter now. Nothing matters now. Nothing. Nothing.
Come on and grab that light. I've had enough of this.
No. No. I'm going to stay here.
You're not staying in this cave. You're coming with me if I have to carry it.
No, let me alone. I'm staying here, Kemp. Kemp, let go of me.
No.
Let go.
Professor, watch out for that recorder.
Ah!
sake of your life.
My hands. Burn my hands. It's so hot.
Both of us, sir. It's getting hotter every second. Come on, come on. We gotta move. Somebody tells me this place is gonna blow sky high.
My hands.
Put your arm across my shoulder. I'll guide you out. Come on.
There's school. 30 years' work.
Stop talking and walk, Professor. We're getting out of here and fast.
I don't remember much about that climb up through the cliff, dragging Sykes with me every inch of the way. I just knew it was hot. I could hear rock falling and rock bubbling thick and heavy behind me down there in that terrible room. I somehow got to the car and stretched Sykes out of the back seat. I asked him how he was, but he didn't answer me. He just kept looking back towards the cleft and the glow of the lava. And then he whispered,
"They knew we'd reached the atomic age. They wanted to be told when. That's what the transmitter did. They came and took the recordings, filled the machine."
Don't try to talk, Professor. I'm going to drive you into town, and we'll get the doctor to take care of those hands of yours.
They sealed off the room with something they thought only controlled atomic power could break into. This time the recorder was triggered to that power. Your torch did it, Kemp. That 300 years in the future torch that did it. They think we have atomic power. They'll come back, Kemp.
Who, Professor? Who?
I don't know. I don't know whether they're friends or enemies or where they are. There'd be only one reason why someone, some creature, would want to know a thing like that. That's so they could stop us.
Oh, no, no, Professor. We're not going to be stopped now. Like the papers say, we're in the atomic age if it kills us. But we're in for keeps. Why, humanity would have to be killed off before to get out of this atomic age.
I know that, Kemp. I know. That's what I mean. Oh, Kemp. Kemp, what have we done? What have we done?
Professor? Professor Sykes? I was going to bury him there, out there near the cleft. I thought he'd like to be there. But then I realized that people would be wondering about him, looking for him. So I brought him in. In the excitement, I left town. It just didn't look good to me. I knew nobody would listen to a yarn like that.
Well, now I can see what Brother Kemp was worried about. That story is true. I, for one, would think twice about telling him.
He's a liar. He's a murdered liar.
I caught a kid that reads that kind of stuff, and I never did like to see him at it. Believe me, he's going to cut it out as of right now.
I think this Kemp guy needs a hanging. Wait a minute, man. If we kill off this fellow, we do it legal, see? You just keep quiet a while longer and let me ask this boy a question. Now, look, Kemp. If there's anything in your story, or in that goofy idea the dead man's about someone coming to kill us off, well, ain't it about time they did?
Yeah! When's the invasion start, kid?
Yeah, maybe we should start digging foxholes now, huh, Kemp?
I didn't say anything about that. I just told you the facts the way they happened. I just told you what Sykes told me.
The whole thing's a lousy pack of lies. It's all lies. Lies!
Wilson! Wilson!
That was a bomb!
Ned Wilson, look!
There! In the sky! Look!
Ships! Ships! The sky is full of ships!
Thank you. kind of a creepy ending there.
Of course. But, you know, it is, again, one of the first, what I would say, adult science fiction programs out there, beating all the others. So presented in a way different from Flash Gordon and things like that. You know, technically Superman would have been a science fiction story, things like that. But, yeah, it's an interesting story with an interesting moral to go with it.
Yep. Oh, an interesting moral, eh?
Yeah.
Funny you should mention. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Brother Gar. Get better soon, buddy. It's not good being 300 years ahead of time because you keep bumping into things that aren't there anymore. That's it.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
That's what I thought.
Yep. That story was chilling, scary. Very scary.
But not,
you know,
not as scary as some of these warnings we have, Dale.
Oh, not as scary as this warning.
Warning! Warning! It's the wife! Warning!
Run
warning!
For it.
It's
run.
The wife!
Run.
It's the wife! Warning! Warning!
Oh my!
It's the wife!
They can smell you having fun a mile away and will do everything in their power to stop it. There'll
That's
be no
right.
enjoyment That's having right. while wedded bliss is going on. I think that's the rule.
So we have some more. We have some more dumb warnings from the Reader's Digest website.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Warning label on a carpenter's electric drill. This product is not intended as a dental drill. Yeah, I would hope not.
Oh, here's one probably inspired from the McDonald's lady. It's a coffee cup, a warning label. Avoid pouring on crotch area.
I can't believe that was real.
Crotchal area. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I just don't want the word crotch on any food-related item. I don't want that word.
Right.
To appear, there has to have been a better warning label than that.
Yeah, especially on a drink-related item, you know? Anyway.
Yeah, that word is not appealing.
Here is a warning on a ski jet. Never use a lit match or open flame to check fuel level.
Same with crotch area. Okay, that was the warning on the jet ski. Here's a warning label on a bottle of, now listen carefully to get the full meaning. This is a warning label on a bottle of doggy medication, you know, like you would get from your veterinarian for your dog. May cause drowsiness. Use care when operating a car.
Oh, you know, that's for those Subaru dogs, you know. I think that's a warning for those Subaru dogs.
I'm the dog medicine. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of that. I'm going back to that ski jet one where it says, well, you got enough fuel to go all the time around the lake? Well, I don't know. Let me see. It looks like, poof, bam, you know? oh, my. Unbelievable.
What is that word Fox Paint put up? Microhulls? I don't know. I have no idea. It's something sciency, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. Being the engineer guy that Foggs is.
Yep.
All right, I'll throw one more in here. Warning label on the dishwasher. Do not allow children to play in the dishwasher.
Why not?
I didn't think it had to be very small children to fit in there, yeah.
Oh. The crotchel. Yeah, so don't put your crotch in the dishwasher. Okay.
Okay.
No, children, don't put children in there. Oh, and finish up with the next one, Dale, for this particular
thing. Oh, might as well. Okay, so warning label on a box of rat poison. Warning, has been found to cause cancer in lab mice.
Yeah, I think you'd want to kill them off quicker than that, you know?
I was going to say. Oh, heavens.
Well, that's enough of those for now. Yeah.
For now, there'll be more. There's more where that came from.
Plenty more. Speaking of more, that would mean if we're going up from the oldest to the youngest, we've got the Escape coming up next with The Invader.
Ooh. Is this with Roy Thinnes?
No, this is with Howard McNear. You know, same thing. I always confuse Howard McNear, Floyd the Barber, and Roy. You know, I always confuse
them. And Roy Thinnes, yeah. A lot of people do, what I hear.
Yeah. It's a natural mistake, I think.
So I imagine we're going to be hearing the dulcet, bell-like tones of Mr. Conrad with this episode of The Escape called The Invader. Oh, originally broadcast.
Episode number 176 from March 29th of 1953.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure?
And goats.
Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are seated before the dials of your radio receiver, listening to a faint voice from the blackness beyond, while the one who speaks with words of friendship is debating the destruction of your world.
Listen now as Escape brings you Michael Gray's exciting story, The Invader.
Here in the Nevada desert, our forward observation post is a slit trench less than 2 miles from ground zero of Operation Doorstep 8A bomb test. The time exactly 30 seconds to H hour. That's the voice of our official guide, Colonel Jim Donovan.
All personnel, put on protective glasses and get below central vestments. We have H hour minus 16, 15, 14,
13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There it goes. There it is. You'll hear the sound of the explosion any second now.
That flash, Commander?
Yes. Check the cyclo gauges for reactions.
Yes, sir. No reaction, zero count. What an extraordinary race.
Very primitive. The main object appears to be to kill each other off at periodic intervals.
I wonder why the Council doesn't order extinction.
There's hope. That's why we've been sent.
But the red zero disks vanished on the same job last Velo. Why waste more lives? The things should be exterminated.
Don't be unscientific. The Red Zero disks probably disobeyed orders and landed on water.
Water?
Yes, water.
Oh, what a place. What do they call those creatures, Commander?
Humans.
Humans? What an odd name.
I'm afraid they're a very odd race.
Yes, yes, Martha.
I saw the bomb test on television this morning. You see it in school?
No, dear.
Oh. Where are you going now?
Into the lab. Call me when dinner's ready, will you, dear? Yeah, let's see.
Albert, I want to talk to you.
Huh?
I said I want to talk to you.
Oh, yes, dear, of course.
I saw Mrs. Warren today.
Yes, dear.
Will you stop messing around and pay attention to what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, dear.
I should merely like to remind you that Mrs. Warren is your school principal's wife. She hinted that he's not pleased with your work. In fact, he's not pleased at all. Albert, did you hear what I said?
Yes. Yeah, yes, dear.
Come back here. Now, stand still and listen to me. How do you think I feel having the principal's wife laughing at you and laughing at me, too? This is the third job you've had in the past 2 years, and you are going to keep this one. I know it's hard for a scientific genius to settle down teaching 12th grade chemistry, but this time you're going to stick, I mean it, Albert. You're making yourself the laughing stock of the school with your crazy experiments, and it's got to stop. I'm just not going to spend the rest of my life following you around from job to job like a gypsy.
Well, of course, dear. Well, I understand.
You'd better understand. I'm not going to stand for it anymore. If you're not down for dinner in 5 minutes, there won't be any dinner for you.
Commander? Magnetrons oscillating.
Probably magnetic storms.
No, it's a definite signal on our channel. Perhaps the council's calling.
We'll raise and bring it in.
Station MXA calling. Station MXA calling. Station MXA, over and out.
That's not the council. Check the frequency.
The emergency band.
Somebody's playing a joke. Tell them to clear the ether.
Stellar disk white zero now. Who's calling?
Moment. Ask for code check.
Stellar disk white zero now. Give name. Code check.
Station MXA, where are you?
Give me the frequent tone. Listen, MXA, this is commander of Delta ship White Zero Null on space mission. Get off this channel. Make a note for the log. We'll report it back to the council. What was his identification?
Sounded like MXA.
MXA. MXA. Check the cyclo listing.
There's no such station listed, Riss.
There must be. Cross-check and fix.
Yes, Riss. No. Absolutely no listing.
Hmm. Oh, no. It's impossible. Those blundering primates couldn't have the intelligence.
What's primates, Riss?
Humans. It's incredible, but use the magna band. We'll keep emergency open. Fix and raise MXA immediately.
Delta ship white zero null. Delta ship white zero null.
Are you coming down to supper?
Oh, Martha. Martha, it's amazing. I've made contact. I spoke to them.
Spoke to who?
Delta white zero null. I've checked the station list. There's no such call sign. It means only one thing, Martha. One thing. Space. Men in space. You know what that means,
oh,
Martha?
Oh, stop it. Albert, when are you going to grow up? Your dinner's getting cold.
Commander Delta White Zero Null, calling station MXA. Where are you located?
Commander Delta White Zero Null, this is station MXA. MXA, I'm located at La Mirada, California.
What planet?
Planet Earth. That's continent of North America. Who are you? Repeat who you are. Over.
Are you humans?
Yes, yes. You aren't...
No. Of course not. We're of Epsilon, from the race of planetoid Delta.
Delta?
On mission of exploration for the Council.
Council?
The Council of Quantum Major of the Nebulae Ursula. We're arriving in your atmosphere in 2 delos more to examine your planet. We cannot continue this unauthorized contact without permission from the Council. If granted, we will raise contact again at your earliest light time tomorrow.
Oh. Did you hear that, Martha? Did you hear?
Are you or are you not coming down to dinner?
Oh, I've done it. Out there in space is another intelligence, another race. And I've made contact.
For the last time, are you coming down
Martha,
to dinner?
Martha, listen, I've made one of the most important discoveries of the century. The first contact with another world, another people or something. Think what it'll mean for civilization. Think what they'll bring. Maybe a whole new way of life.
It's just another one of those radio amateur friends of yours playing a joke.
Oh, no, Martha, that's impossible. The frequency's completely outside the UHF band. No station could even reach the range, much less transmit speech. Oh, yes, tomorrow I can ask questions now. I can find out more about
it. All right, now, I've stood enough. I've watched you wreck job after job with your silly crackpot ideas. I've been hoping that you'd come to your senses.
Oh, but you heard, Martha.
I've put up with this pile of junk long enough. If you don't come to your senses once and for all, I'm through with you.
Oh, but Martha,
I'll give you 5 minutes more to wash and get downstairs or I'm through Albertana. I mean it.
Oh.
Albert.
Yeah.
Wake up, Albert.
Oh,
Steph.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, I'm kind of seven. Oh, yes, of course.
Hurry up and get showered. You'll be late.
Of course. Oh, I mustn't be late. Oh, my. Let me see now. Early light time. Early light time. Oh, I hope I'm not late.
Where are you going?
He said he'd make contact early and late. Night time. Don't worry about breakfast, dear. Just fix some coffee.
You're getting showered and dressed now. Now, do you hear me? You know what the principal said the last time you were late.
Martha, I'm not going to school.
Yo.
Oh, I can't. What? Don't you understand, dear? Today I'm going to contact Delta White. No. In fact, I'm going to contact him right now.
You mean to tell me that you're risking your job for that crazy...
Oh, Martha, it's not crazy. Nobody on this earth could have transmitted on that frequency. There's only one explanation.
All right. I can see that there's only one solution to this. And you've asked for it.
Martha, don't. Martha, stop. What are you going to do? Martha!
Get away from that door.
Martha,
by the
please.
Time I finish with this place, get out of my way. All you'll need is a broom.
Martha, stop. Stop it, I say, Martha! Now, then, you listen to me for a change. For 14 years, I've been teaching sniveling little monsters to blow themselves up for less money than a garbage collector. And for 10 years, I've listened to you nag me out of any sort of manhood. But if you lay one finger on that equipment,
or come in this room again without my express permission, I'll kill you.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, in your town, in the next town, across the nation, you'll find the Red Cross. But the Red Cross is above and beyond all boundary lines, for it is infinite in its scope. In time of hardships, epidemics, floods, fires, the Red Cross is the symbol and soul of humanity. You are part of that symbol because it is the money that you contribute that enables the Red Cross to continue its great work. Answer the call, and humanity will answer you with gratitude. And now, back to Escape.
Not just yet back to Escape, but shortly, shortly.
Just have to have that musical interlude in there.
That and the resumption of the studio segment with our lovely and delightful cohort who has joined us.
Greetings and felicitations. You mean it's not Roy Finnis? I thought it was Roy Finnis. Not?
No.
Now, how are we, it's so easy to confuse those two. I know. I do it all the time.
Well, it still sounded like a great, great show.
Yep. And you could really
I'm
tell,
enjoying it.
You could really tell it was Howard McNear up until the point where he got angry enough to kill. But he sounded like, oh my, oh dear.
Yeah, I never thought of him as a, never thought of Floyd the Barber as a wife beater, but okay.
No, he snapped.
Wow.
He snapped.
Yeah, I mean, no kidding. I mean, whoa, did he get into Otis's store of moonshine there?
There you go. Got into the hooch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
I'm always here to help. So, yeah, with all due respect to the missus there, I think she was just being a tad over the top with being the having the pants in the family. I mean, 99.9% of the time, I agree. You got to get them out of the house and all that other stuff. But yeah, when it comes to extraterrestrial contact, that's where I draw the line.
That's right. Give the poor man the benefit of the doubt.
No kidding. No kidding.
In this circumstance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still just having I'm just wondering, you know, when they were doing that radio show live and what was his look? Because even when he was a barber, he just never had an angry look. I'm thinking, was he, I don't know, getting his Ernest T. Bass craze moment going, perhaps? Or I just don't know. No, I just, it's just so people could be multifaceted performers.
Yeah.
Whoa. But yeah, multifaceted. I'm shook. I mean, I never would have dreamt of him to be a serial killer.
Yeah.
I bet he would
there
have.
There he is.
If that
Floyd
been,
went off his
if
nut.
If that had been in fashion. No, there you go. Yeah. Oh, Floyd. The new Sweeney Todd is Floyd.
Oh, God. Just as long as they don't sing that horrible song. Joanna, Joanna. Oh, God. They dragged
that
song
everyone
out just
now,
a little too long.
Everyone now has that stuck in their head. Thank Dale. Everyone, thanks, Dale.
Yeah. Just one more earworm. That's what I'm here for.
There you are. Yeah. Well, more like an ear cobra, actually, but
yeah, the wine tined.
Mm-hmm.
And the oily boy gets the wine.
Oh, yes, indeedy.
Yes, it does.
No, I'm here in in a shop that I think you and Dave probably wouldn't be. It's a health food shop. There's tons of grains and granola and brown rice and organic.
I actually went to a health food shop once. I asked them where the healthy double cheeseburgers were. They said right over next to the healthy Hershey bars.
The health Hershey bars. Yeah. I actually like brown rice. Brown rice is good. It has more fiber. When you're diabetic, you've got to watch your carbs, and the fiber helps break all that up, helps your digestion, and maintain.
There you go.
Helps maintain a healthy blood sugar level. Mm-hmm.
There you are. All right. Food for thought, literally and figuratively, folks. That was an intended pun.
Yep. Now, mind you, I'm not a doctor. I'm not telling you to go out and eat brown rice, but it works for me.
No, that's right, folks. I'm not a doctor, but I have seen many of them on television and heard them on radio plays. So when you subscribe to this, et cetera, and so on.
As long as we got our legal disclaimers out of the way, we're pretty good.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Don't know how much you caught of this first one, but it's pretty thrilling, CW.
I am enjoying it. I caught it just as our wonderful Mr. William Conrad was giving our preamble to starting They said, "Oh, these humans, what a weird name." I agree with them. Weird little planet. Can't argue with that.
That's why I'm glad I got kicked out.
Oh, yeah.
Of the human race.
Oh, yeah.
And other organizations.
I told you not to buy that brand of cigarette, Dale.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They're cheaper. They're cheaper by the pack. And the carton.
And the truckload. Oh, my God. Oh, dear. But, yeah, I'm getting my organics on, my probiotics. Ah, yes. And my
good
hemp.
Stuff.
Not that hemp. Not the hemp you're thinking of, everyone. It's the other hemp.
Sure.
Yeah. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Good. Anywho,
but
let's get back to this thriller, shall we?
Yeah.
Not starring Roy Thinnes. This one's entitled The Invader.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
XA calling Delta White 0-0. Station MXA calling Delta White 0-0.
This is Delta White 0-0 to Station MXA. Can you read us?
You're coming in loud and clear.
Council authorizes to continue contact. What is your name and function?
My name's Tanner. Albert Tanner. I'm a chemistry teacher at La Mirada High School.
A scientist?
Yes. Well, kind of, in a way.
We too have servants of learning. Did you construct this magnetron channel?
Yes, but I'm afraid it's a bit elementary. I had to use war surplus stuff, and that's never very satisfactory.
Oh, is there war in your territory at this moment?
Oh, no, Commander. Oh, everything's quite peaceful here.
Good. We're looking for a suitable land space and don't want to arrive in the middle of your hostilities.
Well, you'd be very welcome, Commander. We've plenty of space and open fields all around us here. It'd be a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Tanner.
You're welcome, Commander. Might I ask, what is the position of your planet?
Planetoid Delta is 5 light years behind the summer solstice.
I'm afraid I don't understand that.
In elementary mathematical formulae, its gamma is to the power of epsilon to the 7th vector.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course. Now, how is it we haven't observed your planetoid before? I couldn't find you on any of our star atlases.
We're exactly opposite your sun. This would make observation by ordinary optical instruments impossible. But with our magnetic electroscopes, we are able to filter out the sol rays and observe you perfectly.
I see. Commander. When do you expect to arrive?
By your time, late in your so-called afternoon. We shall determine that by later contact.
And, Commander, might I ask a personal question?
Of course.
What do you, what do you look like?
Like all members of the race Delta of the Nebulae Ursula, of course. Is there any other way to look?
Marauder Police Department, Sergeant Williams.
This is Mrs. Tanner, 35 Crescent Heights. My husband just made contact with a Delta Zero something in space, and they're going to land this afternoon.
Would you say that a little slower, please?
That the men from the space are going to land this afternoon. I heard my husband talking to them. You've got to send some policemen out here because I'm afraid.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Now, take it easy. How did you say your husband got this information?
Through the radio.
He got
through his radio.
Sure, I understand. These spacemen radioed your husband.
But I keep telling you, I heard them. The door was open. I could hear them very distinctly. Oh, please, you've got to send help.
This sounds like a matter for the Army, Mrs. Tanner. Why don't you call them?
Oh, but I don't see why I can't go. All right, I'll call them. Oh, what's their number? Oh, please, hurry.
Yeah, well, one moment.
Oh, please, hurry. Are you still there? Please.
It's Mirada 4637.
Yes, thank you. I'll call them right away.
Yeah, you do that, Mrs. Tanner. Yes. Yes, they'll take care of
it. Seven, 4, 6, 3. Oh, no. M-I-4-6-3-7. Oh, please. Hurry. Hurry, please. Hurry. Oh.
U.S. Army, Camp Reynolds.
Can I speak to somebody in charge, please? It's urgent. It's very...
What's it about, please?
We're being invaded by Delta White. I mean, it's spaceships that are coming...
Hold the line, please. I'll give you the duty officer.
Are you still...
Officer of the day, Lieutenant Jacobs.
My name is Mrs. Tanner, Mrs. Albert Tanner, 35 Crescent Heights. Now, please, you've got to send soldiers out here right away. My husband is talking to them.
Oh, that's interesting, Commander. How long have you been in space?
By your time, 5 months. But remember, our speed is twice the speed of light.
Uh-huh. Do you use atomic energy?
Discarded in our bleak age. We use the natural magnetic forces that surround the universe.
Well, what about friction heat caused by your velocity through the atmosphere?
Our speed is adjustable by control of the magnetic fields we ride in. In any case, the disk hull is of Traxendium. It's pressured to withstand anything. Anything that is, but water.
But water? But everything in nature has water. Even the human body is 80% water.
What? You have water in your body?
Yes. It's in different forms, say, such as blood or sweat, but it's still water.
Well, thank you for warning us.
What's wrong with water?
To humans, apparently, nothing. But to our life form, water is a deadly corrosive.
But our atmosphere contains water.
We know, and have sufficient exterior protection for the moisture of your atmosphere. Did you say your habitation was inland?
Yes, you're perfectly safe, sir. We're over 100 miles from the nearest ocean or river. Now, if you will follow my carrier signal down to the landing, you'll be all right.
Thank you, Tanner. I'll report your assistance to the Council. Do you think your authorities will object to our visit?
I'm sure they won't, sir. They'll be honored. We'll all be honored.
Listen, man. I'm either mad or is this a joke? Are you or are you not going to help?
Mrs. Tanner, the CO's away.
away for the weekend, and I've got an appointment. Can't it wait till Monday?
Look, either you send help right away, or I'll send a report of your conduct to my congressman with a copy to your commanding general.
Yes, Mrs. Tanner, I'll be over.
Trust that human, Commander?
Well, there isn't much option. We've orders to carry out. It's an incredible race, but Tanner seems harmless enough.
We're meeting pressure, Riss.
Probably entering the outer atmosphere. Better start degaussing and settle on his carrier.
2700-02. No change.
Switch on the water oscillograph.
Oscillograph on.
Variation?
None.
Good. We'd better check again with Tanner until we see ground.
Right away, Riss.
Delta to MXA. Delta to MXA. Over.
MXA to Delta. You're in, loud and strong.
We're entering your atmosphere.
I'll check your approach on radar and keep tracking you.
We're going off ether. Leave your channel open.
Albert. Yeah, Martha, I thought I told you to...
This is Lieutenant Jacobs from Camp Reynolds, Albert. I heard you talking to the Delta man, and I was looking at...
Your wife was worried, so she wanted me to come over.
Oh, I see. I suppose she told you a story about men from space?
Well, yes, sir.
Oh, all right. You probably think I'm crazy, but you'll see. They're coming in right now, using my channel as a ground approach. You been through signal school?
I'm from 27th Signal Corps, sir.
I see. Then you'll recognize the equipment.
There's something wrong, Riss.
Wrong? Reverse the field. Quick.
There's water.
Tanner.
We're approaching water, Riss.
Tanner, cross-check our position. We have a danger reading.
You're heading straight for us, Commander. You're safe. Why, you're perfectly safe.
Check it again.
There's a great deal of water.
Did you check it again?
Yes, I did. There's a great deal of water, Riss.
Tanner.
A great big body of
there's
water.
There's water down there. Tanner, our signals are at danger. Strong danger. Cross-check your fix. Counter-reverse the magnet. It's water. It's water. Masses and masses of water. Tanner! We've hit water! It's an ocean! Help! Help! We're burning! Ah!
Delta? Delta! What's happened?
Cross-check their position, sir. The signal's getting weaker, but your fix is right. It's within 100 yards of this set.
Let's get outside. Maybe it crashed into the field.
Where is it? There's nothing out there.
But there must be. Maybe it crashed into the trees or... Come on, come on.
Albert! Albert! Look!
I'll read it, sir, but I don't
go
think
on.
It...
Go on.
On Saturday, July 14th at 1400 hours, a telephone call was received from Mrs. Albert Tanner, etc., etc., and so forth. And on going out to the back lot, we could see no sign of the space disk. Our attention was then drawn by Mrs. Tanner to the fish pond from which steam could be seen rising. On inspecting the pond, a small circular object approximately 8 inches in diameter could be seen floating on the surface. On attempting to retrieve the object, it disintegrated as if attacked by a powerful corrosive. End of report.
Well, you forgot about the men inside. You've got to say something about their size.
We never saw them, Mr. Tanner.
Well, what are you doing? Don't do that! Well, you can't
hit that. Mr. Tanner, I'm doing this for both of us. If I sent in the report, nobody would believe it. It's better this way.
No! It's the truth! You saw it happen? Why, you know it happened.
The only thing I know is there's no proof.
As far as I'm concerned, it didn't happen. I never saw anything. I never heard anything. That's going to be my report, Mr. Tanner. No occurrence. Incident closed. Good afternoon, Mr. Tanner.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you The Invader by Michael Gray, starring Howard McNear. Faye Baker was heard as Martha, with Edgar Berrier as the commander. Featured in the cast were Paul Frees, Peter Leeds, Bill Bissell, and Leroy Leonard. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
You are alone on the deck of a stinking convict ship, becalmed in a yellow fog, while somewhere in the dark below you, free you. From the cells that held them, is a deadly band of murderers seeking out your life.
So listen next week when Escape brings you Weston Martyr's exciting story, A Sleeping Draft. Tomorrow night, Lux Radio Theater brings back The Miracle of Our Lady of Fatima for another thrilling performance. 11-year-old Susan Whitney recreates her original screen role as the child who first saw the prophetic vision, co-starring with J. Carroll Nash. Also, tomorrow night, and most of these same CBS radio stations, don't miss Joseph Cotten in Suspense's eerie production of the musical drama Tom Dooley. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, daytime is a gay time with Arthur Godfrey Time on the CBS Radio Network.
I didn't know that. Arthur Godfrey.
That's new. His business, right? You would not expect this music in suspense.
On the topic of Arthur Godfrey, it was interesting that in the late 1950s, Arthur Godfrey's voice was so well known and known as a calming voice that they had actually, if there were a nuclear problem and the president were incapacitated, his calming voice would be like the acting president in a way.
I'm still here, guys. Just going to have to go on mute for a bit.
That's all right.
Okay.
She's probably got to get rid of those Klingons. That was that warning that they were
I'm telling you.
Approaching. So, fortunately, CW to the rescue. She's taking care of the Klingons, gang. Nothing to fear.
Thank you, CW.
Pay no attention to that man behind the window or whatever.
Yep, I'm just getting ready to check out of the store, that is.
Yeah, don't leave us hanging with like, getting ready to check out. It could be horrible.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
No. But I enjoyed that very much. Oh, the poor little aliens. Help me.
Okay. They got theirs.
I do kind of, because they were coming in a small flying saucer or whatever kind of saucer you want to call it. I do have somewhat of a moral to go with that.
Uh-oh.
I figured you might.
Okay, I'm on mute.
Here he Treehouse Radio proudly presents another Garlis Moral of the Story.
With apologies, Cigar. Get better, brother. Sometimes good things come in small packages. And sometimes a small package is just a small package. That's it. All right.
Got a little boost for that one.
It needed all the boost it can get. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Yes, indeed. Do we have some more warning signs?
Yeah, that's what I just think. So while CW is kind of stuck there in the checkout line, warning on a vanishing ink marker. Not that I actually knew there was such a thing. Anyway, mm-hmm. It says, should not be used for signing checks or any legal documents. Okay.
You know those little iron-on shirt thingies you get, you know, you buy them, you put them on your shirt, and it says, "Yeah, iron it on," right? Warning label,
right?
Do not iron while wearing shirt.
I like this. Boy. A warning on the Razor scooter. This product moves when used. Really?
You just wonder about humanity that we have to have these things, such as this warning label on a hair dryer. Caution, do not use while sleeping.
Still there? I'm still
okay.
Here.
She's
good.
Back.
Yes, and
back.
I actually have 2 cents left. Wow, I actually have money left. Hold 2 cents. Woohoo!
You got more cents than I do.
At least we've moved up, Dale. At least they have the warning on hair dryers where do not use while sleeping. They start off by saying, do not use while taking a shower, is what they used to say.
Yeah. I got to save time. I'm going to take the hair dryer in the shower.
Well, thanks for going shopping with me, folks, everybody.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad we can provide security.
So,
keep the weirdos away.
So
what'd
you get
weirdos than us away.
What'd you get?
Well, let's see. I got you some blue organic tortilla chips.
Oh, I like those.
I got you
some, actually like those.
Yeah. I have some organic gluten-free Thai noodles with garlic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sundry items of protein drinks.
Okay.
And a keto organic gluten-free hemp flax peanut butter protein bar.
Good for smoking. All right. Hemp there.
Yep, so smoke them if you got them. And
yep.
Some peach sparkling water. So a repast fit for the crowned heads of old. And it costs as much as well.
It sounds like you're all ready for the coronation tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. His Royal Majesty, Charles Philip Arthur George, shall become his most regal sovereign of the United Kingdom and all points on the compass. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah.
Those blue corn chips, those organic blue corn chips, I like those with some good salsa. Salsa?
They are tasty. I don't know if you like these. They have no salt, but there's usually enough salt in the salsa or anything else to compensate. So, yes.
Yep.
So, my healthy snack food.
I would like to get they got to make red chips somewhere. You got to make red ones.
They do.
Because then you could have red, white, and blue and do that on the 4th of July. Hey.
They do have those. I've seen those. I haven't seen them made organically. I've seen the red hot. Those have your sodium level will hit the ceiling and go into outer space.
No, yeah, no. I don't need the sodium. I just need the red color.
Super delicious and super spicy and super good. And I'm not super lying either.
I was looking at Bob's comment from the end of the show when they announced daytime is gay time.
Oh, I don't know if we're going to have enough
daytime
time.
Daytime is gay
time? Well,
I
know that. Dave, I
totally
have to say yeah, I was on mute when I heard that one. So, yeah. Yeah.
Hey. Thanks, good old Bob, for paying attention to that one.
Yeah. I don't think we have enough time for this suspense, gang. I'm totaling up the time, and it ain't cutting it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
The short one?
Yeah, I know.
It's
we only got
one.
24 minutes, and there's like 24 and a half minutes of suspense. And it leaves us no time to say goodbye and cheap promotions and so forth.
Oh,
very important.
That was a cool episode.
I know. Sorry, I should have given you. I should have given you warning.
Ah, well.
Yeah.
Red alert.
Yep.
Crack open.
That's all right.
Crack open.
We'll just shift gears. We'll save the suspense for another time. Or we can make tomorrow's show 2 hours.
Oh, well. We could do that.
And we'll just slap suspense on there along with some CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which we will tell you more about after we do a little filling in time otherwise since we lost suspense for tonight.
Newspapers are just as good an advertising medium as radio.
Sure. Driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Listen to radio.
Family.
Where you go, medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who? Listen to radio. No matter if it's summer, winter, spring, or fall. Who listens to radio?
Got to have some marmaladio.
Ah, yes, marmaladio, the new superfood.
Mm-hmm. Comes in 3 convenient sizes.
Yes. Marmaladio.
Bigger and biggest, right?
Yes. Marmaladio rhymes with yodeling pickle-adio.
Yep. Do we have the yodeling pickle?
Where did he go? You know that yodeling pickle is a hard thing to keep track of. I don't see the yodeling pickle.
After we do the wheel of
yodeling pickle.
I'm shocked. Shocked and appalled. Wounded to the quick.
That's all right. We'll buy him some time with a wheel of radio.
Woohoo!
Would you care to spin, young lady?
I would be delighted. Just a sip of peach sparkling water and spin, spin, spin to win.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Did you have an interesting day today?
Oh, yes, I spent most of it in a pet shop.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It was, but I really didn't intend to go in there. You see, I was passing by, and I saw all these cute little puppies in the stall window. So I knocked on the window to get their attention, but they didn't notice me. So I knocked a little harder.
I see.
And so while I was in there paying for the window, I thought I'd have a look around.
Yeah, well, you might as well get your money's worth.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I was in there because I saved one customer some embarrassment. She was in there to ask the owner of the store a silly question, and so I answered it for her.
What was the question?
Well, the week before, she bought a 3-month-old puppy, and she wanted to know if a dog that age should have bones. And I said, well, of course it should. If it didn't have bones, what would hold it together?
The owner must have been glad you came in.
Well, if he was, he didn't say.
Never mentioned it.
No, but then again, he was very busy trying to pull a bulldog's aching tooth, and the dog wouldn't open its mouth.
Well, then he couldn't get tooth out.
No, he couldn't even get his hand out.
That can start a new fad, wearing one glove and one bulldog. Did you help anybody else?
Oh, yes. A lady came in to buy a cat, and she knew absolutely nothing about them. She didn't even know why cats see better in the dark than people do.
You don't tell me.
Why not? It's very interesting.
You do tell me. Why do cats see better in the dark than we do?
Well, they have to. You see, they're not tall enough to turn on the electric light.
Well, I never thought of that. I guess that's why I'm the straight man.
So, I told this lady to watch her step with cats. I said they can't be trusted.
They can't, huh?
Well, look at my sister Hazel's cat, James. We trusted him until he had kittens.
What made you think that James was a he?
Well, you know, that's another thing he did that fooled us. She had whiskers.
What kind of a cat is it?
It's a pedigreed Iranian.
Iranian? Well, that must be a new kind of a cat.
No, it's an old Persian. But when they changed government, the cat had to go along with it.
Yeah, if I had my hat, I'd go with the old government. You must be crazy about animals.
Oh, yes. My favorite is the horse. You know, George, nothing will ever take the place of a good horse.
What about the automobile?
Oh, no. How about all those statues in public parks with generals sitting on horseback? If they were sitting in automobiles, they'd have to put new models under them every year.
Now in a park. How'd we get out of the pet shop?
Well, for me, it was easy. I just waved goodbye to the owner, and he waved goodbye to me. You know, he's very strong.
What's strong about waving goodbye?
With the bulldog on his hand?
That's, of course, George and Gracie.
Hey, Dale, I actually had something that I'd been holding back for a while because it was kind of a little bit longer. We have an Alfred Hitchcock Tales for the Young, Frightened Tales for the Young. If you refresh, you should be able to find it there in the wheel section.
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
Yeah. Well, that's a little longer. Why don't we throw a little bit of Hitch in there?
No need to go through the pretense of spinning the wheel. Since we already blew the illusion all to hell, let's give this one a shot from Elf. The Open Window.
I've been thinking the past few minutes. It's interesting to note how being afloat makes one thoughtful. The soothing motion, I suppose. At any rate, I was thinking that perhaps it might not be a good idea for you to listen to too many ghost stories. For instance, this is the sort of thing that could possibly happen.
Mr. Nuttall was a very nervous man. He had been undergoing treatment for several years now, and as he had an independent income and no need to work, he spent a great deal of his time in visits to friends and relatives. Before his nervous condition had come about, he had been an almost total recluse, spending a great deal of time raising mushrooms in his damp cellar and reading a large number of books. As a consequence, his visits to see relations consisted of meeting a large group of comparative strangers. It was in the early fall of the year when he knocked on the door of the Sappleton residence. He was ushered in by a very dignified 10-year-old girl who asked him to have a seat and told him that her aunt would be down shortly. She sat for a moment, glancing at a large, strangely bound book, then looked up at Mr. Nuttall. Do you know many of the people around here? She asked. Hardly a soul, said Mr. Nuttall. Then you know practically nothing about my aunt, said the girl. Now, Mr. Nuttall admitted he knew only her name and address. The young girl smiled sympathetically. Her great tragedy happened just 3 years ago. Tragedy? Inquired the nervous Mr. Nuttall. The girl pointed to the French windows leading to the lawn. You may wonder why we keep that window open in the fall of the year. Oh, it is quite warm for this time of the year, said Mr. Nuttall, shifting in his chair. But has that window got anything to do with the tragedy? The girl then told him this story. Out through that window 3 years ago this very day, her husband and her two younger brothers went off for a day's hunting in the woods you can see there. They never came back. In crossing the swamps to their favorite piece of hunting ground, all of them were engulfed in a treacherous piece of quicksand. Their bodies were never recovered. That was the dreadful part of it. My poor aunt thinks they will all come back someday, they and the little brown dog that was lost with them, and walk in that window just as they used to do. That is why the window is kept open every evening till night falls. Poor dear aunt, she has often told me how they went out, her husband with his white raincoat over his arm, and Ronnie, her youngest brother, singing, as he always did to tease her because she said it got on her nerves. Do you know that sometimes on still, quiet evenings like this, I almost get the creepy feeling that they will all walk in through that window. Mr. Nuttall shuddered and was relieved when the aunt bustled into the room with a whirl of apologies for being late and making her appearance. I hope Vera has been amusing you, she said. She's been very interesting, said Mr. Nuttall, glancing in the direction of the open window. The long shadows of the late afternoon made the distant trees even gloomier, he thought. I do hope you don't mind the open window, said the aunt in a brisk voice. My husband and brothers will be home shortly from hunting, and they always come in this way. They've been out in the marshland today, so they'll make a fine mess on my poor carpets. So like you menfolks, isn't it? She prattled on cheerfully about the hunting and the scarcity of birds and the prospects for duck in the winter. To Mr. Nuttall, it was all purely horrible. He made a desperate but not too successful attempt to turn the talk to a less ghastly topic, but he was conscious that his hostess was not giving him a great deal of her attention. Her eyes were constantly straying past him to the open window. He thought it was an unfortunate coincidence that he should have paid his visit on this tragic anniversary. He cleared his throat nervously and tried once more to capture the attention of his hostess. The doctors agree in ordering me complete rest, an absence of mental excitement, and the avoidance of anything in the way of physical exercise. On the matter of diet, they are not so much in agreement. No, said the aunt. Then she suddenly brightened into alert attention. Here they are at last, and just in time for tea. Don't they look as if they're muddy up to the eyes? Mr. Nuttall shivered slightly and turned toward the little girl to give her a smile of sympathy. The child was staring out through the open window with dazed horror in her eyes. In the chill shock of nameless fear, Mr. Nuttall swung around and looked in the same direction. In the deepening twilight, three figures were walking across the lawn toward the window. They all carried guns under their arms, and one of them carried a muddy white raincoat. A tired brown spaniel was close at their heels. Noiselessly, they neared the house. And then Mr. Nuttall heard... Good heavens, just as the little girl had said, one of the men was singing. Mr. Nuttall grabbed wildly for his hat and coat and dove for the front door. Flinging it open, he ran down the path, tried to jump the hedges, tripped and fell down. He picked himself up and with one terrified look back at the house, ran down the road toward the railroad station. Back in the house, the figure carrying the muddy white raincoat stepped in the open window and said, "Well, we're home, dear. A bit muddy, but on time for supper. Who was that that ran out as we came up to the house?" That was a Mr. Nuttall, dear, said the aunt. Some distant relative who dropped in for a visit. Extraordinary man. All he seemed to talk about was his illness. And when he saw you coming, dashed off without saying a word. I don't know what to make of it. The little girl shook her head gravely and said, "I expect it was the spaniel. Mr. Nuttall has a horror of dogs. He was telling me just before you came down that once he was chased into a cemetery by a pack of wild dogs and had to spend the night in a newly dug grave with the creature snarling and grinning and foaming just above him." "Oh, why, the poor man," said her aunt. "One would have thought he had seen a ghost." The little girl smiled sweetly.
Ooh, and that's the end. Oh, creepy, creep, creepy.
Wow.
And creep.
I think she was just a troublemaker. She was just a troublemaker.
You should have warned me it would end so dark. So there's always bonus radio. If we can't get you three full shows, we'll give you enough.
Enough.
And more.
No.
Enough. No mas, no mas.
Sorry, I plucked that off of the wheel, Dale. Uh-oh.
Oh?
Dale went into the fishbowl again.
I went into the fishbowl.
There you are. He's back.
Whoa. There you are.
We got a few
you know,
more
Dale, when somebody said that you like goldfish, you should have told them you meant the snacks, not the real goldfish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. We got warning labels.
Oh, we got more warning labels. Let me see. Where we leave off there?
I'll pick it up with caution. A warning label on a package of fireplace logs. Caution, risk of fire. Okay.
Next is a... caution on a package of brass fishing hooks. It says harmful if swallowed. I thought that was the whole idea. Only mean if a person swallowed. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. I get it.
Yes. Please use on fish, not on humans. Maybe that should have been the warning.
Ah, yes.
I don't know.
Okay, that
How about
been,
this
yeah,
one
yeah.
on a can of pepper spray? Warning, may irritate eyes.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, you kind of
Again,
also.
I thought that was the whole idea behind Crest, you know?
Yeah.
There's a warning label on a cartridge for a laser printer. It says the toner cartridge on a laser printer. And it says, do not eat toner. Oh, man. I was out of pepper. I was going to use that.
Oh, I was going to use that as a nice seasoning for my noodles. Well, you know, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
It's organic. Graphite.
Hey, did you ever find
too.
The yodeling pickle?
I didn't yet. Where'd he go?
All right. Well, I'm going to cover for you. I'm going to cover
the
for
yodeling
you.
Okay. pickle.
I'm going to do my best.
Yodeling.
There you go. That's the best I can do.
There you go. There you go.
I think the yodeling pickle's probably the yodeling pickle's on the picket line with all the Hollywood writers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, I bet he is. He's in the writer's strike. I bet
that was a scab yodeler. He's out there picketing the other one. This one's a scab. Scab yodeler. Okay, let's play that family fun game, Identify That Yodel. I challenge you, Fogsbane. I challenge you, good old Bob. I challenge you, CW. I challenge you, Dave. Identify that yodel.
Is that the girl from the Beverly Hillbillies?
No. No.
Charlie Weaver.
No. One more time for the guys in the chat.
Is that Mr. Haney from Green Acres?
No. No. That was from an episode of The Three Stooges. If you remember that. There was one where it had a pretty girl and they're up in the mountains and he had to learn how to yodel. That was Curly.
Was that Curly?
Mm-hmm. Unless they dubbed it, they could have dubbed it.
They must have dubbed it. I don't think he had the range to do that sort of thing.
He was surprising.
You never know. Curly was quite a talented guy.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
He actually, I believe he actually could sing, but that would have ruined his character.
It would have.
I know.
Would have.
The Curly, he could dance. He was a ballroom dancer, correct?
Actually, I think he was, yeah.
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 If we had time, I would find the original episode of, I forget which one it is, but they end up in a college and they sing the alphabet song for the first time.
Yes.
It was later redone with Curly Joe DeRita on the kiddie albums or whatever. But the original
the
one was Curly. He sang in that. He did sing in it a few lines.
Yeah. They were professors. They were like college professors. They were dressed up as that.
Yes. We'll play that again sometime here when we have time. I don't have time to fish it up, upload
Dale,
it, and play it.
What's happening tomorrow on Erie House Radio, Dale?
Well, in addition to the suspense that we got ripped off of tonight, we'll add that to CBS Radio Mystery Theater Out of Sight. Be warned, it'll be another great show.
Yes.
Be warned.
It will be.
Yeah,
and it is an interesting story. I'm glad we're getting to share it because it really is an interesting sci-fi story coming to us from about 1960, right around there, I think. Off the top of my head. So it's really an interesting story coming up. Actually, 62. So,
very good.
So everyone, wonderful. Hey, everyone, when you've had your fill of the royals and their lavish lifestyle of crowning their sovereign, come on back to the colonies and listen to Erie House.
That's right. And we're going to end a little differently with a warning. Here's our warning. Good night.
Okay.
See you tomorrow.
Your choice is simple. Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.
Of choice.
Okay.
We shall be waiting for your answer. The decision rests with you.
Alrighty then. That's how you want to be quiet.
Okay.
Gort Moringa.
I timed that pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Somebody knows how to back time.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Just a little
be
taste. A little taste of Bernard Herrmann.
It's a little better if the clock were better for back time, but oh well.
Yeah. Sometimes it works good, but sometimes the clock is off, and sometimes it's me. Well, we're human. We're all human.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But I think if I'm going to go online and watch the coronation live, I have to be there online about, was it 3 a.m. our time or USA time or something?
There's a good 6 hours difference from the Eastern time zone I only know that because of an episode of I Love Lucy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No. Dave, you were talking about back timing. Okay. And I went to Baldwin Wallace for a couple courses, not as a registered student or anything like that, but for a couple courses in broadcasting. In fact, one of the things is I got my broadcasting license, which I never used, but other than there at the campus station, and I took, some classes. I had a show on college radio for a while. And they had a colored dot system. You had to play a song of this, whatever. But you had some freedom in what you picked, right? Well, everybody kept, like, panicking about, oh, they got a back time for the top of the hour. There was a news feed. Like, there was a 10-second sounder, and then there would be this external news feed. So you had to be right on time. And they said, they would always panic and say, you didn't leave enough time. No, I picked a song with a redundant ending and I'm going to fade it out just in time for the sounder. It's like, oh. I'm like, why make it hard? Just use common sense.
What's the lingo meaning sounder? What does that terminology mean?
It's like a lead in, like, coming up next, the news, blah, 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 or, one of those kind of announcements that lead into a feature or a regular segment.
And if it were a live over
some
the air segment,
some places call that a sounder.
Source, and if there were a live, like a news source coming through, if they used ABC or CBS to get their news, there would be about 10 seconds before, there'd be a beep that you could hear in your headphones. That would come through, that you would know to flip on the news.
Yep.
So it's a segue, essentially, isn't it?
It's a type of a segue. Yeah, you had to segue.
Yeah.
The way I did it was a segue because I would fade out a song with a redundant ending, in time for the lead into the news.
Yep.
Yeah, I just never heard that particular term sounder before. Segue, yes. Sounder, no. You're speaking Venusian right now.
A little industry jargon.
on the service for the blind that we have in the 1 o'clock hour between the monitor and the repository, we have the weather report, and in there I have a little weather sounder, which I can't use in the repeat at 3 a.m. because if people left their radios on, it would probably wake them up and scare them half to death. But during the daytime, it's fine to wake them up and scare them half to death.
Isn't that the idea?
I can imagine someone accidentally in the studio putting that on, and somebody's left their radio on all night long, and they're in a deep sleep, and all of a sudden, aliens attacking! Help!
you know what? It's interesting because I thought when we started broadcasting 24/7, thanks to automation. I thought, boy, what a waste of time. Then I had a family come in and they all say, oh, thank goodness you broadcast overnight. My dad can't sleep because what happens, like in small babies, the blind can't tell the difference between night and day. And therefore, they sometimes get their whole systems turned upside down.
Yeah.
And so by having something there, I mean, on television, what do you get? Infomercials. It's all they got. Well, they could tune into the radio, and they could listen to programs.
Yeah. Mm. See, that's why they never let me work in a nursing home, CW, because, like, I would set their alarm clocks at, like, 2 a.m. to go like this. something like that.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
Mr. Sulu, turn off that alarm right now.
Or if it's an all-male nursing home.
Warning! Warning! It's the wife! It's the wife! Warning! Warning! It's the wife! It's the wife! Warning! Warning! It's the wife!
Yeah, I think we get the hint. I think we get the hint.
Or if you're in Switzerland. There you go.
I just thought of taking that one you did in the middle, it's the wife, and putting that out on the loudest volume on my droid outside of, say, a gentleman's club.
That would be, I would have died laughing because I had to work in one for a short period of my DJ career. I had to work in a gentleman's club, as they put it. Or as the missus called it, the Hoochie Coochie Bar.
Yeah, I would go in. Yeah, I would just, you know, just go right near the door. Or maybe just put a hat on and go, you know, breathe past the doorman. And then just go in the middle of it and all of a sudden just let it go and just see glasses fly across the room and panic looks.
or hook into the Wi-Fi and take over the speaker system and blast it, blare it inside the joints. Yeah.
I did not have this sound, but when I worked at the gentleman's club, I would have got fired so fast. Because I would have been tempted to do it. I would have been tempted to do it because I always took chances in the regular bar that I got away with. You would not get away with that in a gentleman's club.
No.
They take themselves very seriously.
Yeah. Or even better, they record my voice and just say, all right, I know my husband's here, and I've got the divorce lawyer on speed dial.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
All right,
it was
man.
Hilarious. I remember. Like,
it was all joke.
I am so lucky
joke.
Because
good.
My wife never gave me any kind, you know, like, come on. If you were, as a man, worked in a place like that, you would expect your wife to say, oh, you want that one and you want that one. Uh-uh. She would tease me because the way you got paid is it was called tip out, and they were required to give you, I think at the time it was $7 each girl. And like on Saturday night, there'd be like 20 girls there. You'd walk out with a minimum of 140. And sometimes they would tip you extra for helping them work the crowd. And I'd walk out of there with like $300 on a Friday night. This was back in the 90s, you know, when that kind of money bought you a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd be sharing the hall with the missus, you know, with all these singles and fives and stuff. And she'd go, wow, that one must read. And how much, which one gave you the 20? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. She calls herself a gypsy or something. Oh, she likes you. She would tease me like that,
oh,
you know, like in junior high. That was worse. Why don't you accuse me of something? Jesus.
Now she was just counting the cash. Okay, this pays for that utility, that bill. Oh, wow, we've got enough left over. We can have a barbecue. Woo-hoo.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
But I did have fun. I did sneak in sound bites one time. Oh, what the heck did I do this one time? It was so funny to... Oh, they had this thing that you could adjust the pitch control or something.
Okay.
And it was the afternoon, and it was really slow, so I was just playing with music for the girls to dance to or whatever, and there was this one song by Ugly Kid Joe called What I Like About or What I Hate About You. I don't know if you know that one, but at the end he goes, What I Hate About You. Well, this girl's swinging around on the pole, and I hit the pitch control. It goes, what I hate about, whoa, wow, you know. She flew off the pole into some dude's lap. It was so funny.
Oh, my God.
She actually tipped me very well because the guy felt bad for her and gave her a bunch of his money. It was hilarious. Oh, God. You could use it to, like, beat mix. It would sample for you, too. It would sample a segment of a song. Now, I was not a very skilled beat mixer like people in the highfalutin dance clubs, but I could tinker with it a little bit. I had a little fun with it. But some of those guys are amazing. Yeah. You'd never know where one song ended and another one began until, like, lyrics or a very recognizable piece of the music started cutting in.
It's a fine skill. Yeah, that's when the rave clubs that where you have these DJs who really, well, they have lots of state-of-the-art equipment now, but still, they do exactly what you said. They can cut from one side to another, and you never miss a beat.
No. Mm-mm. Because they can adjust the overall pitch control. I remember when I first started... The older nightclub DJs, they did it with their hands, dragging the turntables, you know. They had these real heavy turntables, Techniques, what was it, 1200s, Dave, I think they were called. And they were so heavy, you could kill a man with one. I kid you not. They were very heavy, but they were very sturdy. They didn't skip. But also what was sturdy was the drive on the turntable, so you could drag it with your finger and adjust the pitch that way. But they also had a slide that you could adjust it to. So you could try to match it up before it was time to mix over by matching the beats per minute and then just picking it up. And then you just pick up the beat and then slowly segue into the next song. But you did it all manually, where now it's all done electronically. Right. AI, man.
Oh, yeah.
He was challenging Curly to a yodel.
As they yell across the Alps to one another.
Men versus gherkins.
Oh, so now the pickle is jealous. So I think he's a sour pickle now.
Yes, he's a sour pickle.
Come on.
Warning label on a letter opener. Warning label on a letter opener. Safety goggles recommended. On a letter opener?
Yeah. Well, it depends on if you're not opening the letter with it.
A notice on a bar of soap. Use like regular soap. Okay.
As opposed to irregular soap? What?
Yeah,
what
I don't know.
What people had to have done for corporations to have to legally put this on there. They must get these focus groups and ask the lowest of the human gene pool. Okay, we're going to put this product out. Find a way to really hurt yourself with it. There's coffee and cookies out in the hallway. And people do this. And then they go to the lawyers and say, well...
Now, what's your occupation? I'm a product tester. I try to test things for things that they weren't made for.
Dynamite tester.
Yeah. I have found that dynamite does not make a good charcoal starter for barbecuing. Thus, they put that warning label on the dynamite.
Yep.
Yeah, I was trying to make a steak and it ended up being chicken nuggets.
Yes.
Shredded
chicken.
Happened. Shredded chicken.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Gentlemen, I must be away, so I will complete my final task of the night. get that turkey off the stage? Because Mr. Durante is taking over.
As soon as I find him. Oh, here we go.
Oh,
good night.
Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more does this say but good night?
His Majesty wishes you a great night.
And it's time for toodaloo. Hurry, boo, up we the thing. And ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Mrs. Calabash will be watching his Royal Majesty getting crowned.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.